But I would love to see if with Braun, they could tie that back in. Because of the fact that they had to relinquish those tag titles like the next week or the next day.
Yeah.
All right. Just because Nicholas was too young and couldn't miss school.
Yeah.
All right, let's. I want to talk about Jade Cargill a little bit because we heard from her on Friday Night SmackDown, and I believe she's scheduled to have her first match in what feels like forever next week. And, you know, she had a really heartfelt interview talking about, you know, Naomi didn't just hurt me physically, she hurt me emotionally, and she betrayed our friendship and all these things. And then out comes Liv Morgan interrupting this interview. They had a little confrontation. And there's a few things that I want to point out about this this interview. So I believe Jade Cargill is going to be facing Liv Morgan next week. But also, Raquel and Jade Cargill in the same segment, in the same, you know, I guess picture, to me, I got excited. I want to see Raquel versus Jade Cargill. And not only that, but this whole thing that's going on with Bianca Belair and everything, right? Kind of took me back to what we talked about earlier in the week. When it comes to Io Sky, I want to see Io Sky beat Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley, which is what I'm pretty sure is going to turn out to be a triple threat match. And I have a feeling that Io Sky is going to pull this off with the help of Jade Cargill. Jade Cargill is going to come out at WrestleMania and interfere in this match. And that's how Io Sky is going to win. And that's when we're going to find out that Bianca Belair is in fact involved with all of this that is going on with Jade Cargill and Naomi. That's what I want to talk about. When it comes to this interview, I know I'm all over the place tonight, but first thing, Jade Cargill next week versus Liv Morgan potentially could lead to Raquel Rodriguez versus Jade Cargill, which I want to see. And I think Bianca's still involved, but who wants to go first here, fellas? Tommy, your hand was up first. Go ahead.
One, blood, you're lucky I'm not eating my fucking pizza rolls, you piece of shit. I'm over here laughing my ass off. Because you're over here acting like you're either asleep or dead. One of the two. But Liv and her, those two are going to be... It's going to be an interesting match. Especially to see if Raquel gets involved. Those two are definitely going to go at it either way. Especially knowing the fact of how much anger she's still holding in. Like, she is still emotionally pissed to the point where she will absolutely wreck the face of anyone that gets in her way. Yes, I know. Pause. I understand that was a pause.
Unpause.
Fuck you. But I would honestly like to see her go up against Raquel as well. I'm completely with you on that, Snug, because I believe those two have a history together. If I'm correct, those two have a history with each other. Like, blood, am I wrong on that?
Who has a history together?
Raquel and Jake.
That's fucking news to me. As far as I'm aware, Raquel was out on injury the majority of the time that Jade's even debuted in WWE.
I'm not even saying in WWE. I think they have like an actual past.
Not that I'm aware of. Jade really got her start in AEW. Raquel was never in AEW.
Her conversation stuff with Brandy. Never mind.
Yeah, you're thinking of Brandy Rhodes. Yeah, no. Yeah. Raquel. Jade literally got, if I remember correctly, came onto the wrestling scene through AEW got quote unquote trained by AEW, then had to get retrained by WWE for all the shit she learned wrong in AEW.
Yeah.
And then, because they let regular wrestlers train her, not actual professional fucking veteran trainers train her. And then she was in the Performance Center so much longer than she was supposed to be. And they debuted her last year, very beginning of last year. I mean, honestly, yeah, my opinions on it are pretty simple, but I'll let you go and finish your thought.
But I still would like to see a match between the two. Because you've got Raquel, who's got that speed and all of that. And then you've got Jade. God damn it, both of you. And then you've got Jade, who is an absolute powerhouse. Both of them are powerhouses. But that's pretty much it.
All right, so look, my thoughts on Jade Cargill and, Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez are this. I'm annoyed that Liv Morgan and Raquel are even on SmackDown. Look, in my opinion, it's this simple. I, massive Liv fan. I enjoy Liv's work. I've been a fan of Liv since the Riot Squad, okay? I've been a huge fan of her the entire time. Jade, it's simple. I enjoy Jade's presentation. I enjoy her intensity. But she is greener than fucking baby shit in the ring. And she's gotten somewhat better, but even her last match in the company, right? Her last match before she got injured, tag match. Bianca is still hiding her weaknesses in the ring. I'm not ready to see a one-on-one match at Mania with Jade Cargill until I get some proof in the interim that she can hold a match together on her own without needing to be helped through every facet of the match. Her entrance, dope. Her presentation, dope. Her character, dope. Her intensity, her presence, fucking dope. But it says a lot to me about your division on SmackDown, your women's division on SmackDown, that you have to bring over your biggest women division stars of Raw onto SmackDown in order to pop a rating for SmackDown's women's division. Where you're like, you know what? Even though, you know, Liv Morgan involved in all of her own stories, she's literally, by the way, the MVP of the women's division of 2024 of Raw. She actually wrestled more matches than anybody in the company on the women's side, on and off screen. And I respect Liv for the very fact that she is a hard worker. And I've seen her footage where she's with kids doing autograph signings, and she is the sweetest person in the world with fans. That tells you just how good she is at being a heel. That's why, like, someone like BT cannot stand her in his bones, because she's so good at being a heel, so good at her job. She's literally made you hate her legitimately, and that tells you just how good she is at being her character. When it comes to Jade, Jade's character isn't really a character. It's, I'm Jade Cargill. I'm a powerhouse, powerful Black woman. I am whatever, and I'm this huge, big, beautiful, sculpted, strong, powerful Black woman who is basically Bianca Belair 2.0 with more intense presentation. And in my opinion, do I want to see Liv versus Jade Cargill? No, because in my opinion, it's just a David versus Goliath match. Liv Morgan is, in my opinion, gotten a million times better over the last 4 years in the ring. She can put together a match. She can sell. She has a much better moveset. She's got a great direction. But putting her with Jade, do I think Liv Morgan is good enough where she could carry someone as green as Bianca through a match? I'd have to see it. Because I thought, for instance, that Bayley could carry anybody through a match. And then I watched Bayley versus Lyra Valkyria. Okay, so, you know, will it be a fine match? I'm sure. I think it's going to end by interference.
By Raquel.
By Raquel. But do I need to see Raquel versus, or by Naomi, but do I need to see Raquel versus Jade either? No, because in my opinion, I don't have enough faith in Jade in the ring yet to say that I want to see a big versus big match with her. I would trust a Jade Cargill Mania one-on-one big versus big match if her opponent was someone like Bianca, who I know could get a great match out of her. But I don't know why this feels like filler. It feels like, in my, you know what the biggest problem is? I said this a couple weeks ago. Here's my biggest problem with this Mania. This whole Mania. Here's my problem. They booked it too far out. That's the problem.
Storytelling.
You put it in the third week of April when it's normally in the last week of March or the first week of April. You booked it an extra 2 weeks after that when the last pay-per-view before it is almost 2 months prior. And that's why we're having so many problems with Jey Uso and Gunther's story, why it feels so stalemated and halted. We're trying to tell the story of The Rock and or John Cena and Cody, but John Cena can only be there when it fits the schedule. Okay, we're supposed to be telling a long burn story between Drew McIntyre and Damian Priest, but are we supposed to watch them just jump each other for the next fucking 4 weeks? Are we supposed to watch the Bloodline jump LA Knight for the next 4 weeks? We've been watching it already for 4 weeks. So my problem is there should have been another pay-per-view put in between fucking Elimination Chamber and WrestleMania. If WrestleMania was going to be at almost the end of April, you needed one more buffer or a Saturday night's main event in there, something to put another notch in the stories or something, because right now it feels like we are literally, it feels like every single fucking rivalry in this company is circling the wagon, holding its breath for Mania, and nothing truly feels like it's getting progressed across the board. So you have to throw in people from other brands to fill out your stories in the interim, like throwing Liv as a Raw superstar in on SmackDown.
They're in a European tour.
Who cares? Everyone, we still have brands.
Everyone is traveling. Everyone is in Europe, so why not use your top stars on either?
Because they've been traveling. They've been traveling all week. They're all going to be at the same live events. They're all going to be at the same TV tapings. It's one giant production travel. They're all literally in the same four buses. Use them
on the same shows?
Because you still have brands. Because it makes it obvious. What's the point of the brand split if you don't adhere to the brand split?
That's been long gone for a while, I feel like.
But then why tout it every single year? Why act like it's so important every year that you do the draft if it doesn't matter? It has to matter. If you're telling me it matters, you need to show me that it matters.
All right, let's hear from
Blowing people over just because you need to fill some time, it's a waste.
Let's hear from Toxic. We haven't heard from him. Toxic, what did you think about this interview with Jade Cargill?
The interview was honestly disappointing. I was expecting a lot more. Fuck Liv Morgan, by the way. And Mr. Blood, I do have an answer for you why Liv Morgan and Raquel are on SmackDown. It is because of the Women's Tag Team Championships. They can go through any three brands, Raw, NXT, and SmackDown. So that is why they are on SmackDown. And
then
I
talk
find that
to
fucking
a tag team.
Exactly.
Then talk to a tag team.
Exactly. It's fucking stupid. Why not just make Raw Tag Team Championships for the women's, and bring the NXT Women's Tag Team Championships back, and the SmackDown, and like make a SmackDown Women's Championship.
They wasted a week to further the Naomi story. They wasted a week.
Exactly. But like I said, the Jade interview, it was just disappointing. I was expecting more.
Yeah, they're definitely playing the long game here with Jade Cargill. I had a feeling she wasn't going to give us a whole lot, and she didn't. You know, she took her time, and then Liv Morgan and Raquel came out and interrupted the interview, which gave them another reason to kind of extend this whole thing. But final thoughts, Mr. Blood, and then let's move on.
I'm going to say something real quick that we've all heard and that it's massively important when it comes to this.
Raquel Rodriguez is the best. Yes, I know.
Fuck you.
The best undercarder for sure. But when it comes to this, you said something, Snug. You said it's long-term storytelling.
Yeah.
You're wrong. You're wrong, and I'll tell you why. There's a difference between long-term storytelling and taking too long to tell a story. And that's the problem that we're having across the board right now. They are taking too long to tell every single one of these stories lately. Mania should have been booked for the end of March or the first week of April, because then we'd be there in 2 weeks for closing shows. Waiting another month and what, 4 days? Come on. We got to sit through this another month and 4 days until we get some payoff. Nothing is happening. The biggest thing that's going to happen between now and the next 2 weeks is just going to be John Cena face-to-face with Cody Rhodes. What else is there? We're going to watch Kevin Owens and Randy jump each other for another month and a half, another month and a week until something happens? Come on. You see what I'm saying? Long-term storytelling, taking too long to tell a story.
Yeah, I mean, taking too long to tell a story, yes. For, you know, I do agree with you to a certain extent, but also sold out fucking arenas, ratings to the top. They don't have to do almost anything.
Well, yeah. And you are right. You are right.
So it's like, they're going to keep doing this until people are.
You are 100% correct. The product is hot, but at the same time, what excuse is that to cop out? Because they're copping out. That's what that is. It's a cop out. We're so hot and we can sell out everything, they'll come and watch anything that we put on TV, even if it's nonsensical and doesn't feed any story we're trying to tell.
It's working.
That's an insult to the fan. It's an insult to the fans' intelligence.
Not only that, how much money are people paying for WrestleMania tickets? Not only that, how much?
Some are over $2,000 for middle row.
The Monday Night Raw, literally the Monday Night Raw before WrestleMania is sold out. It's here in my hometown, and I can't afford to go because I already bought WrestleMania tickets. But the tickets for the fucking nosebleeds right now are like $300.
I want you to understand that I can go to NXT anytime. I'll show you guys later in the chat. I get invited to NXT live tapings every week in my emails. I have two friends that work there, but I also get fucking emails because I'm a local. And they literally email me so I can sign up to come to NXT tapings twice a week, every week for the last year. I could have gone this past week just from signing up last Saturday because they invite me every week because the tickets are free. But I don't, because I don't really care that much to drive 45 minutes to go watch the show.
If I were you.
And here's the thing, I could, but I got a million other things to do. My wife wants me to sign up because she wants to go. My wife also does security for Universal Studios right around the corner. I can go to TNA like I used to anytime I want, AEW tapings. The reason I don't is because to me, I'm more interested in the main roster storytelling. I'm not 100% sure on the storytelling happening next year, and I'd be lost if I went. But at least I can say if I did go, I could at least be more entertained by the freshness of the stories on NXT versus the shit that's been circling the drain on the main roster. I love every story they're telling the main roster, but it's hard to not get bored when you are waiting this long for payoffs. This is a long time for payoffs.
All right, let's move on to the next thing, because I feel like BT Knight, he's in Australia. He's probably going to fall asleep on us here. So, BT, are you all right?
I think he's asleep.
Oh, God damn it. I'm going to have to edit this out. So,
I think Mr. Blood took too long.
Let me see. Hold on. Let me see. What's going offense, on Blood. Here? Tommy's here.
BT, wake up. Liv Morgan's the greatest.
What the hell? Where's Tommy?
I think his screen froze. Oh.
And there he goes.
I think it's screen for us.
Okay. All right. What the? Tommy, what are you doing, Tommy?
I had there to go back out and back in because black screen.
All right. Just really quick, because we have a lot to talk about, and Charlotte Flair versus B-Fab ended in Charlotte Flair winning by submission. And then Charlotte Flair, when she had the submission, she didn't let go even after the bell rang. So Charlotte Flair is a super heel now. Tiffany Stratton came out for the save, and they had a huge pull apart. I mean, like, huge pull apart, okay? These women were fighting nonstop for, like, felt like 15 minutes or something crazy like that. Security guards couldn't pull them apart. They were jumping off fucking balconies and top ropes and all these crazy things. These women, which kind of leads to like what Mr. Blood was saying, that, you know, we have such a long time. We have a few weeks until WrestleMania, but these women went from being like not very familiar with each other, and now they're really pissed off with each other and they're fighting nonstop. And I really want to see this match. I'm so excited to see Tiffany Stratton versus Charlotte Flair. When it comes to WrestleMania and Charlotte Flair, I feel like Charlotte Flair always delivers in WrestleMania. Tiffany Stratton is one hell of a wrestler, one hell of an athlete. We're going to put these two in the ring at WrestleMania, and I think it's going to be lovely. So, thoughts on this match with Charlotte Flair versus B-Fab and the Afterbirth? Who hasn't gone first? I think Mr. Blood, I don't think you've gone first yet. Let's go with Mr. Blood and then Toxic.
Toxic, eat it. As far as concerned, look, Charlotte Flair, you guys know, that's my number one draft pick for the women's division of all time. I she's my absolute favorite. Tiffany Stratton has also come such a long way. No yeet Toxic. As far as concerned, I think that, in my opinion, this might be the most exciting thing that's happening on SmackDown, because it's being done sparingly, because we're not getting a lot between these two. It is very sporadic where it's happening. Charlotte has never had a bad Mania performance. And if she has, I dare you to fucking find it and then show me so I can tell you how wrong you are. When it comes to Charlotte Flair, again, she had the best worked fucking match last year against Rhea Ripley at Mania. It was the best match of the weekend. Fight me as far as work rate is concerned. I will end on that hill. And when you have Tiffany, someone who's so hot and so over and so fresh and so charismatic and has such a great crowd connection, and she can also work. Not only does Tiffany not need help already looking great, just having Charlotte in there with her is going to make her look like $1 billion, not a million. Because the girl already looks like $1 million. She works like $1 million. Put Charlotte in there with her, her stock goes through the roof. If Charlotte puts her over, bro, the rocket on Tiffany Stratton's back, that girl will enter a whole nother fucking galaxy on that propulsion. And Charlotte is at the point of her career where she's starting to do the right thing. She's not selfish anymore. She made it with Becky. She had that coming to Jesus moment. She realized what's important. And she's almost 40. So she doesn't need to hold the gold. I'm sure they'll give it to her again at some point this year. But I think she knows the right thing to do is to put Tiffany over at Mania. Like she did the right thing last year, and she put over Rhea at Mania. And there's that famous shot of her that I fell in love with when Rhea won last year, where Charlotte's just looking up at the Tron across from her, leaning up against the apron on the outside of the ring, and she's literally kind of crying a little bit while she's literally smiling and clapping for Rhea. She's so proud of her. She's at that point where she is definitely like the mother hen of the locker room, in my opinion, like Natalia is, where she's just there to cultivate new talent, to sit there and make sure that they have the right tools to be the next generation. And I think putting Tiffany in Charlotte's, you know, line of sight under her learning tree, especially since they're working so closely together, Tiffany just strikes me as that kind of person that's a sponge for information and knowledge of the game. And what better sponge than, you know, your fucking, what, 14, 15 time world champion in Charlotte, who's done it all, has nothing left to prove, and is now at that point where she's selfless in her career. She's going to help Tiffany Stratton unlock the next fucking gear of her career. And I'm here for it. The only gripe I have about this this segment with the brawl was awesome. And I loved that they kept coming back. I also find it funny that a group of grown men cannot hold back two women who are not more than 125 to 130 pounds soaking wet. And for some reason, these girls can keep breaking through four to five guys apiece. Guys, hit the gym. But also, sometimes I get annoyed at the whole let's all stand in a group so someone can dive on us. We were all fighting each other, but now let's all just face the same way and do it. And then let's all look up collectively like, oh no, this 130-pound girl is going to jump on the group of all of us that total weights are probably around 1,200 people standing here, 1,200 pounds standing here. But we're all going to get knocked over by the 125 pounds. When she did the flip, she didn't even hit Charlotte.
Since we're being picky, Mr. Blood, really quick, and I'm going to let you finish your thoughts before we move on with Toxic. Tiffany Stratton's front flip, when she did the dive, when she was going to jump, when she jumped on the crowd of security guards, is it just me, or does she wait till like the very last second to tuck her chin in?
She waits.
And I'm just like, she waits because, like, you get what I'm
saying? Here's the thing. It's on purpose. And I'll tell you why. When I did gymnastics, when I was in middle school and early high school, we learned a lot. It's called tumbling training. When they're teaching you how to do flips, it's called tumbling practice. And I learned that when I was doing my rotations for front flips, standing front flips on the tumble track, and on middle floor, was that if you rotate second to last minute, you're going to stick the landing every time. If you rotate too early, you over-rotate and you go straight on your face. Or she was also worried if she over-rotated at that angle, as high as she was, she would have landed feet first on them instead of back first where it's safer than to catch them. She would have injured somebody. So she does that on purpose based on the height.
Fair enough.
Same thing at War Games. She rotated last second so she would get the back first.
I always cringe every time she does a front flip. Like, oh,
I feel like she's completely gonna break her neck or something. She's the last person you have to worry about because she's also a very, very accomplished gymnast before she came to WWE.
I just have to throw that out there real quick. But go ahead, finish your thoughts so we can move on to talk.
But my thought is the standing in a crowd thing. I get tired of that trope sometimes because of it takes me out of the realism only because there's eight of you guys that are all totaling near 1,000 to 1,200 pounds, and this one person of 120 pounds drops on you and you guys all fall over. And when she did the flip, she didn't even hit Charlotte. She hit the two people to the side of her, behind her, and Charlotte still fell over and sold it like she got hit by a fucking bowling ball. And I was like, okay, that took me out of it a little bit. Cool-ass visual, but come on, guys. She didn't even touch Charlotte. She touched two people over, and they all fell down. And Charlotte sold it like she got knocked out. And I was like, come on. What are we doing here? Stop this. Other than that, it's going to be a fire Mania match. I wouldn't be surprised if it steals the show work rate-wise at Mania.
Well, Toxic was supposed to be next, but I don't know where he went. So let's go with BT Knight. Thoughts on this match here with the Charlotte Flair and B-Fab, and then the afterbirth, the big pull apart with Charlotte Flair and Tiffany Stratton.
Hello, hello, hello. You guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, good. All right. First off, I didn't get my thoughts on the Jade Cargill interview, but if you want me to move on, that's fine.
No, let's hear it. I don't know. I'll take full responsibility for that, BT Knight. My bad.
It's all good. Just very quickly, I'll make it very quick and then go straight to the Charlotte and Tiffany stuff because I really didn't give a fuck about the Charlotte and B-Fab match. I didn't even watch it. I just saw the ending. So, anyway, the interview, Jade was really emotional about it and I love that. The part that I'm very happy about is how she brought up that Bianca so easily tag teamed with Naomi. But the part that really got me was how they were like, we were all sisters. We were all friends. And I'm like, really? Really? But that's neither here nor there. Liv showing up. Oh my God, somebody hold a ray gun to my fucking skull. I swear to God, if I hear that woman laugh like a female Joker. Jesus Christ. But there's a... No. There's a reason why she showed up. Because she has been falsely accused of attacking Jay Cargill. And she deserves, as much as I fucking hate it, she deserves to rub it in everybody else's face. She fully deserves that. And I'll definitely give her that excuse. But quit the fucking laugh, would you? Jesus! Oh, jeez. That's my thought on that. Charlotte and B-Fab didn't give a fuck about that. Saw the ending. Charlotte and Tiffany crash out season. Absolutely love it. Shout out to In the Clutch, my favorite YouTube streaming platform. Always with the crash out season merch. Love them so much, bro. Love them so much. Their reactions are priceless. I always love them, bro.
I never miss their wrestling reacts.
Yeah, kicking it with Ross is my favorite. He's my favorite, bro. I've tagged him on Twitter so many times. He's reacted to some of my content. He's fucking awesome. He legit has the script for every single fucking show. I'm telling you. But anyway, Charlotte and Tiffany crashing out. Absolutely loved it. But yeah, I'm really getting sick of the trope where everybody piles up, someone dives, and the people, there was about 5 or 6 people that didn't get hit, and half of them included Charlotte. Like, how many people had to not get hit and then still sell the fact that they felt? That was Jinder Mahal levels of selling, bro. When Jinder Mahal, when that motherfucker jumps off the top rope, and then he just goes, oh shit. He just sells it and never got hit. Like, bro, I'm starting to get really sick of that trope as well. But yeah, them crashing out in the crowds, I absolutely love it. I love it when they do that because the crowd gets to interact with them, and we always see some of the funniest stuff with the crowds as well. So I loved every single second of it. It definitely gave me a second to forget that Charlotte and B-Fab match, because I don't even think the Barca crowd was even reacting to that, apart from booing Charlotte continuously. I don't think B-Fab was getting any reactions at all, which is pretty sad, but...
They released Sonya Deville and Isla Dawn, but kept B-Fab on the main roster to wrestle once every 5 months. Go figure.
Yeah, and fucking be Meechin's backup, which is completely useless if she's going to lose continuously, but that's neither here nor there. But that Tiffany and Charlotte crash out was... fucking awesome. It's not CM Punk and Seth Rollins crash out levels, because those two crashing out will always be fucking legendary, but it's definitely up there. I'm very excited for that match, so those are my thoughts.
All right, Tommy and then Toxic.
So the match was I honestly wish it was better, because it honestly deserved to be better. But the crash out, absolutely loved it. And also, what a way to start this off. This man could not even hold the crowd together because people were so focused on round two between Tiffany and Charlotte. Miz couldn't even hold the audience together because those two were still going at it. What a way to start that off. But these two, it's a blondie battle. It really is. It is a battle of the blondes. Which blonde is the better blonde? That is the question for WrestleMania. Is which blonde is the better blonde? That's pretty much it. But it's still going to be a great match, and we all know it.
Toxic.
Okay, completely forgot my thought because of Mr. Blood. Thanks for taking so long. And my phone died, so yeah. but the match, I hated it. Holy shit. Crash Out season is upon us. Jay turned back to Crash Out, Jay. Kevin Owens crashed out before Elimination Chamber and went to Sammy's house. And now we have Charlotte and Tiffany. Like, holy shit.
Security is going to be helping.
Like, they, it takes them like what, 20 to 30 people to pull apart two blondes that have the exact, that has the same exact moveset. But whenever it comes to Jacob Fatu and Sherman, they're like, "Oh hell no, okay. I ain't doing that shit."
Someone needs to explain. Oh, not someone. You, Toxic. You explain this crash out word that I keep hearing. What the fuck does that even mean?
Crash out is where like you just give up, where you let out all of your rage and just be a menace. Okay, so, but it's crazy because they didn't just go one round and then they didn't just go backstage and be done with it. Miz TV started, Cody Rhodes hasn't even came out yet, and they're still fighting. They come back out for round two. Tiffy ends it by just jumping off the Tron. And then Cody crashes out. So, yeah.
All right, cool. What else do we got next? Just really quick, Gunther and Axiom had a match. Yes, Axiom was there because that was his hometown. Yeah, apparently he's from Spain. And I saw a video or a picture of him showing up at another show in Spain, Matt, without a mask. Never seen him without a mask before. But this is the tag team, the NXT tag team champion. He's a mid-carder in developmental NXT. Went blow for blow with Gunther, the world heavyweight champion of Monday Night Raw. Which tells me what the fuck, Jey Uso better fucking beat Gunther at WrestleMania. This match, even Wade Barrett was saying it. Like, Wade Barrett said this, and I quote, I wrote this down because this was really important. This match should have been long gone. Axiom got way too much offense on Gunther. Again, Axiom. NXT's one half of the tag team champions. From developmental, I must add. Tommy, let's go with you first this time. What did you think about this match? And I know I kind of skipped over Randy Orton versus Carmelo Hayes, which we'll get to. That's going to be the last segment before we get out of here. So let's go with you first, Tommy. What did you think about this match?
I honestly completely agree here that the match should have been over before it started. Like, it was a good match. Axiom gave him a run for his money. He truly did. But at least, like, he's not on the same level as Gunther right now. He's just not. Like, almost, unless you pay attention to NXT, you don't know who Axiom is, pretty much. Unless you pay attention to NXT, in which he didn't even come out with his NXT tag title either. It was just him.
I didn't even notice that.
No, it was
he did. I saw him.
just him. He didn't come out with the title.
I swear he did.
I didn't see it.
You must be blind or something.
Yes.
I don't remember him coming out with the title, but you could be right, Toxic.
But even if he did, this match still should not have happened. It was just another match where Gunther can just go, hey, Jay, how about you watch as I beat the crap out of another one as preview for WrestleMania? That's all this match was. Was just Gunther trying to show off. That's it.
All right, who was next? Was it let's go with BT and then Toxic and then Blood.
All right. Gunther versus Axiom. Axiom put up a real good fight, and the evasion that he got in his hometown, very happy for him. Reminds me of Sami Zayn getting his ovation in Canada when he came up from NXT to go up against John Cena in 2015 for the US title. Just gave me those flashbacks, so I thought it was an awesome moment for him. The match itself, awesome. They're basically telling the story of, can Gunther actually get the job done? Because we saw the same thing that happened at Saturday night's main event. Jey Uso got a lot of offense on Gunther. This isn't the first time that we've seen this. Jey Uso got a lot of fucking offense, only to lose to two fucking power bombs. Like, it's not the first time that we've seen this. And people are now actually questioning, is Gunther going to get the job done? And I like that. They're showing a vulnerable side to Gunther, which is something that I really like. As far as Gunther goes, his promos still need a lot of work, although I will give him the shout out for the El Clasico comment, basically saying, it's lovely to be in Barcelona, but I wish I was in Madrid. And then he hits that a la Madrid. I've got the Barcelona poster right there. Big Barca fan.
Yeah.
Real Madrid fan. Love that the El Clasico. Lovely. Yeah, one of the best football rivalries of all time, in my opinion. Anyway, Gunther still needs a bit of work on his mic skills. But apart from that, awesome stuff. Did what they wanted to do. Really good development stuff from Axiom. And I can't wait to see what they do with the NXT tag titles in the future. So those are my thoughts.
Put them on solo. No, I'm kidding. All right, Toxic, go ahead.
Okay. Watching this match made me think of something. And I've been saying that Gunther's reign has been stale ever since he beat Randy. But I have noticed that Gunther is getting softer. He is getting softer. Over the past couple weeks, his opponents have been putting in a lot of offense. For instance, Akira Tozawa, Otis, Jay did a Saturday night main event. Axiom tonight. All of Gunther's opponents that he's faced on a weekly basis has been getting in a lot of offense just for Gunther to hit the sleeper or the powerbomb, and boom, that's it. By the way, Gunther can only prove that he's strong by sneaking up on Jay and hitting him with the sleeper. That's the only way he's proving that he will beat Jay. And another way he's getting softer, he goes up to Jay's brother to try and convince Jay to not do this when it's already locked in. There's no going back. They can't just say, hey, John, you're going against Gunther now and Jay's going to go against Cody. You can't do that. He goes to Jimmy and says, hey, tell Jay to back out of this. Because for whatsoever reason, Gunther does not believe that he's going to lose. When he has, when a lot of his opponents have been putting in a lot of offense once again, it's just, he's trying to play mind games that don't really work. Jay is completely different from when he faced Gunther at Saturday Night Main Event, and I am confident that Jay will beat Gunther at WrestleMania. Four letters, one word, yeet!
I agree 100% with you, Toxic, except for that last part. The whole four letters. Gunther is completely going soft, and Jay Uso is gaining a lot of momentum. Mr. Blood, your thoughts on this match with Gunther and Axiom?
Four letters, one word, yeet!
So
now, that's stupid. Just, that was for Toxic. But as far as it's concerned, we have a problem here. Because in my opinion, when I look at this Gunther that we're seeing now, this Gunther loses to Randy Orton last year. This Gunther loses to Sheamus 2 years ago at Clash the Castle. This Gunther, let me ask you this. The only reason you let Axiom come out tonight is because it's hometown. It gets a massive pop for the audience. He's a hometown hero. Triple H is going to give that to him. He wants him to have it. You're also only going to give him all that offense so the crowd can get behind him louder and cheer hotter and be more into it because it's the hometown guy getting more offense. That's the only reason you would book the match that way. But it's a problem. Because though it's a feel-good thing, you basically just sat there and said, hey, well, if a rando from NXT can come up here and give the world heavyweight champion the work, you're basically saying, hey, this NXT guy is better than our two main roster guys who also gave fucking Gunther some work a couple of weeks ago. Otis more than Akira, but Otis definitely got some fucking minutes in that match. And you're saying, hey, those two main roster guys, two of our main roster guys, couldn't take Gunther further than this guy from NXT. A tag wrestler from NXT couldn't take Gunther, or sorry, was able to take Gunther farther than a main roster Otis. A main roster Akira. You get all their comedy wrestlers. That doesn't fucking matter. You just told me that this one guy in NXT is better than two of your main talents in the main roster. So if that's the case, why should the NXT roster want to get called up in the first place if they're already doing better than their main roster guys now? That's what you just told me. And on top of that, Gunther is, yes, getting told the story of he is proving to himself that, hey, I can beat Jay because I am able to beat all of these other people that are in the same realm of Jay. Nothing beneath me, not worthy. And you're going to sit here and tell me that you're honestly comparing Axiom and Akira and Otis to Jay. Jay, world record holding tag team run wrestling Jay. Bloodline Jay took Roman to the limit. First person to pin Roman Reigns in almost 4 years, Jay. You're telling me that Gunther's trying to prove that Jay can't beat Gunther just because Gunther can beat Akira, fucking Otis, and Axiom? That's how he's supposed to prove to everybody that he can beat Jay? Again, and I say this, the most important title reign of the modern era of this fucking century being that of Roman Reigns, who ate his first pin loss in almost 4 years from Jay. You're telling me that these three guys are who Gunther is trying to prove are on the same level as Jay, and that's why Jay can't beat them? They don't compare to Jay. Not to mention, even if you take Akira and fucking Otis, tag team wrestlers, and you take Axiom and Faxiom, whatever, and those are tag wrestlers, those two teams together couldn't lace up one pair of the Usos' boots when they're together. So if you wanted me to believe that Gunther stands a chance against Jay, and that's what he's trying to prove, you need to be putting Gunther up against somebody that Jay is on the level with. It should be Jimmy versus Gunther. If Gunther's trying to prove a point, he should go up against Jimmy. He should go up against AJ Styles.
Aren't they trying to build up Jimmy, though?
But that's the thing. Whether you look at it or not, Jay has the push, yes. But Jimmy and Jay are just as good as each other in the ring. They have the exact same moveset, down to the fact they both use spears, super kicks, the Uso splash. Their movesets are identical. They are just as good in the ring together because they were equals in their tag team. That's why they were so great. They are literally on, people act like Jimmy is the less better twin. They're on the same level, bro. And not to mention the fact that Jimmy is better on the mic than Jay. So when it comes down to it, if you want me to believe that you're telling me this story of Gunther trying to prove that he's not vulnerable, that he's dominant and Jay can't beat him, why don't you beat someone who's just as good as Jay or better on the way to Mania? Beat Jimmy. Then I'll think you can stand a chance against Jay. But you know why they won't put Jimmy against Gunther? Because they're afraid the match would be too similar. They're afraid that the match that Jimmy and Gunther would have would be the same match that we would see at WrestleMania, because they have the same moveset.
Well, they had a little confrontation tonight, and like you mentioned before earlier, Mr. Bled, we still got a lot of time before WrestleMania. Who's to say we don't see Jimmy?
It's possible we get it. It's possible. It's very possible we get it. But if you're asking me, I need to see Gunther going after people who aren't just fucking cannon fodder. I need to see Gunther put down someone who's actually more of a credible threat in a one-on-one match, man. Have him go up against Drew McIntyre or Damian Priest or someone that Jay has beaten. Have him beat someone Jay's beaten to prove that he can beat Jay. If the vulnerability, if the hubris and the anxiety and the doubt of Gunther is the story you're trying to tell, that he's trying to prove that he can beat him even though he doesn't believe in himself anymore, show me someone more than just a bunch of lower card acts.
No,
that still, by the way, got their offense in on.
No, I agree with you 100%. Like, when it comes to, like, Akira Tozawa and Otis and Axiom, like, I get why they put them versus Gunther, because Gunther beating them, it's kind of like, oh, Gunther's taking advantage of these guys.
Yeah, it's cruel. It's cruel.
It's cruel. It's supposed to give him heat, but they almost beat him.
Exactly. So if they can almost beat him.
I'm like, Jesus. God forbid.
If they can almost beat him, what hope does he have against Jay at Mania with 80,000 people behind him, all that adrenaline fired up to the fucking masses? It's literally a foregone conclusion then that Jay is walking out as your goddamn world heavyweight champion. One word, four letters. Yeet.
No yeet. Anyways, you guys, other than that, we had a Randy Orton versus Carmelo Hayes. Randy Orton won, and then we saw Kevin Owens show up, go after Randy Orton. We had a Miz TV segment that didn't really go as planned. Cody Rhodes was a special guest, but he attacked The Miz. We had no Miz TV, no interview, which I was actually looking forward to. And then we saw Damian Priest versus Shinsuke Nakamura, which ended in a disqualification because Drew McIntyre attacked Damian Priest. And then we had an in-ring promo by Paul Heyman. But other than that, that was Friday Night SmackDown, you guys. We'll see what happens at Monday Night Raw. Monday Night Raw is going to be airing at a special time, so we have to figure out our schedules, fellas, and see what we're going to do with that. But that was a SmackDown review. Thanks, everyone, that was watching, listening, and commenting. Sorry I didn't get to your comments. They're still not working. I haven't figured that out yet, but we'll figure it out soon. Until next time, my name is Edgar. I'm the host of the Snug Wrestling Podcast. Thank you, Blood. Thank you, Tommy, BT, and Toxic. Have a good night, everyone, and we'll see you soon.
No, you. You.